Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And it is also a place where I get to talk to people that I love and writers that write books that I love. Today, this is really something special because I love Scotland. And so I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Lexi Elliott. And the name of her book is About Bright and Deadly Things. It is a fantastic book. Hi, Lexi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's a thrill for me, I can tell you. I was worried, would you have Scottish brogue or are you now very Oxford and very poshy?
I think there's quite a lot of Scots still in my accent, particularly if I've had a glass of wine.
Oh, good. I love it. I could talk to people from Scotland all day long. I'm one of those people who love bagpipes. I have bagpipes on my morning playlist.
Wow, you know, that is something.
I mean, it perks me up. You know, it puts a smile on my face. I was so thrilled when I got you. I had been worried that I wouldn't be able to get you on, and of course, your writing is fantastic. But you are everything that I just admire so much. Not only from Scotland, you went to Oxford. And, when I was a little girl, I dreamt about it. I visited many times. I'm one of those people I can say, I've been to Oxford. I've been there many times. Wow. You are an amazing person.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind of you to say.
I'm going to let you do most of the talking so I can hear your accent. I just want you to know why I love Scotland so much. Our very first trip, my husband and I flew up there, and we rented a car, and we immediately headed for a town where I had made reservations. It's not far from where John Paul Jones was born, and I wanted to visit that. And so we started off in one of those little cars with the steering wheel on the wrong side. I keep saying, I want to go to Kirkcudbright. Where is Kirkcudbright? Do you know, people would send me no kidding. All these wonderful people along the side of the road were so helpful. They must have had so much fun sending us in circles. So pronounce
it. Yeah, there's quite a few places that have interesting pronunciation that doesn't exactly match the spelling, but Kirkcudbright is one of them.
We loved it, and we went back many, many times to Scotland. Mostly we stayed in Edinburgh at the George, so I know it well.
Lovely place.
So the new book is called Bright and Deadly Things, and that is also something I love. It's set in the Alps, and it's a reading retreat, which, I mean, you know, that's like my dream place. So everything about this book I found fascinating. Of course, it's very suspenseful. You're a great writer, and I love the cover. I just love to look at it, Bright and Deadly Things, with a very bright cover.
It is set in the Alps, you're absolutely right. And in fact, I am in the Alps right now because it happens to be half term for my children. So we're on a short skiing break in the Alps.
Whoa, I should have come and done an interview over there with you.
Yeah, that would be fun.
So tell us about this idea for our great mystery at a reading retreat. What a wonderful place to kill people off.
Well, yeah, the idea came to me because I had been invited in the year 2000 when I was doing my doctorate to exactly this reading retreat out in the French Alps where three Oxford colleges have a chalet called Chalet des Anglais. And I spent a lovely week there back in the year 2000 and absolutely nobody died. But, it really stuck in my mind as being quite a special place. And I loved the atmosphere of it and the fact that it was very rustic, no running water, no electricity. And so when I came to think about setting a thriller in Oxford academia, I wanted to do something a little different than the regular campus thriller. And I thought about the chalet, and that's how I came to set it there. So the premise of the story is that we meet Dr. Emily Rivers, whose husband has unfortunately recently died, and she is struggling with grief and handling her new situation without her husband by her side. and she accepts an invitation to go out to this chalet for a week with a group of people, some of whom she knows and some of whom she doesn't, and they're drawn from different levels of university life, from undergraduates through to quite senior professors. And even before she gets out there, she experiences a break-in at her home. And when she gets there, she finds that there's tensions within the group and some mysterious goings-on, and the chalet itself seems to have quite a dark history. And, she has to figure out how this relates to herself and potentially her husband, because it's beginning to look rather fraught for her, shall we say.
Oh, yes, rather. And you write so beautifully. Your characters, your words. Of course, I wouldn't expect less from somebody who's gone to Oxford. But, you know, you have that real insight and talent to draw out the characters and to paint a picture and to make us wish we were right there along for the ride. And we are when we're holding the book in our hands.
Well, that's the power of books, isn't it? But that's very lovely to hear you say it. But yes, it's an escapism, isn't it? And I particularly like to write thrillers that have a very strong setting, because I think that's something that I enjoy myself in my reading, and it's a world I want to inhabit while I'm writing as well, that there's a strong sense of setting, a strong sense of atmosphere, that something that I find really intriguing and I'm happy to go back to every day.
And you know, when we're talking about a suspense book, it's so important that you really have to fine-tune it so that you keep the reader constantly a little bit on edge, wondering where exactly they're going. You have a device in here, you have a clock, which also gives us this ominous feel of time and space and what's going to happen as we continue turning the pages.
There isn't actually a clock in the real Shelley de Zombie. So that was definitely an invention of mine. I think it arose initially because I was thinking about, you know, Emily's struggle with grief and her sense that the time that she has allotted on Earth is running out fast. You know, she's very aware of the fact that she is stuck in a rut and really needs to get hold of her life. And I think the clock became sort of a physical manifestation of that sense. But also the clock itself seemed to want to build out its part and became, by the end of the novel, it represents much more than that. And obviously there's no spoilers, so I won't go into more detail on that. But I think you'll find that the clock is quite meaningful in the story.
It is, definitely. And yet we're not going to give any spoilers, because part of the fun of any book is this reveal as we go along, as we peel away the layers and find out what's happening. But now with this clock, as you said, it there isn't one there yet, but now I think you're going to have to donate one.
What a good idea.
Yeah, you're going to have to find a real lovely antique one and donate it and put it, you know, they'll put a plaque there for you. So, you know, for hundreds of years from now, Oxford people will still be coming there and they'll see your clock, right?
That is an excellent idea. I shall have to work on that one.
Well, I'm sure it would be welcomed, and they will be proud of you, because I'm sure they're having fun reading the book too. All, you know, it's so amazing. I was just talking to Cassandra Clare, and she spoke recently at the Oxford Union. She was invited. She's an author, a young adult. She, you know, wrote a series of books called The Shadow Hunters, and
that's right.
So she was invited to speak there, and of course she was so thrilled. There is something, you know, it's just for I think for all writers, of course, you know, anybody who loved Lord Peter Wimsey, Oxford is the place, and certainly for, I know for Cassandra, it was like a goal in your life that you can't even imagine that you get to speak there. But I don't know. Have you spoken there?
Not at the Union, no. I suppose I've given various presentations in various lecture halls through the course of my PhD studies. It would be quite different to go back there as an author, I suppose, because whilst I was there, I was studying physics and then theoretical physics, which is very different to, obviously, what I do now.
Well, you know, it's just so much fun to think about. Well, as I said, I lived in England for quite a while. I was a Jane Austen fan as a child. When I was 11, I decided to move to England to live near where she was born. So I moved to Sonning. I bought a cottage, a 400-year-old cottage in Sonning. I lived there. That's near Henley. And so a trip up to Oxford was... it was always, you know, on a lovely weekend, mostly because there were wonderful, wonderful secondhand bookstores and I could find books.
Oxford is beautiful, and I've been really fortunate this year to go back quite a few times for friends' weddings, and I had a reunion at University College, and I've actually got one at New College coming up. So I've had quite a few trips down memory lane recently, and you know, Oxford just is pretty special. The architecture, the people, that it just has a feeling. You can't really escape the sense of history there.
Oh, it's just to walk the streets, to get to, you know, look in some of the buildings, and of course, as I said, the bookstores, they're secondhand bookstores that are just a joy for a book lover.
Yes, and one of the pleasures of my life is having my book be in the Blackwell's bookstore in Oxford. You know, when my debut novel, The French Girl, was published, I was so excited to see it in there. That was just a highlight for me.
Well, and The French Girl is fantastic, too. I love that. Yes, I can imagine, you know, to go there and see your book. And since you were studying science, you didn't expect to become a novelist?
I always wanted to be. Even from a small child, I really wanted to become a writer. But I suppose that I was fairly pragmatic too, and I thought I ought to follow a career that was more likely to result in being actually able to pay the bills. So I followed physics instead, and I never really gave up on the dream of it. I was writing short stories in my spare time. Not that there was a lot of that when I started working in the city. But I lost my job in the global financial crisis, as many people did in the financial industry. And that was the point at which I found myself with a little bit of extra time on my hands. And I thought, maybe I'll give this novel writing a try. And ultimately, after a good many years, produced The French Girl, and that set me on the path that I am now.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, see, good things do come out of financial crisis sometimes, and out of the pandemic. A lot of people did, you know, knuckle down and start writing, you know, after years of saying they were dreaming of writing, and they actually did. So we're getting some new authors who are emerging now as a result of the pandemic. What is your literary background? Took literature classes? You studied the great work? How exactly did you study in Oxford?
So, universities in the UK are quite different to the US. So if you go to study physics, that will be all you do, physics and any math that you need for physics. There's no such thing as an undeclared major. You are accepted onto a particular academic course, and that's all you do. So there wasn't an option for me to study any English literature whilst I was at Oxford. It's just not how the system works. I did a lot of English at school, and I read voraciously. I have always read quite a lot in a very wide-ranging, right across the genres, shall we say. And I honestly think that reading is the best path into writing. I think you should read anything and everything, and then perhaps start thinking about taking some courses about the craft. And the combination of the intuition that sort of you gather from all the reading as to how things should be set out and where you need the pace to improve, where you need the beats and so forth. That can be reinforced by the lessons on craft that you take. And then after that there's no substitute for just getting your bottom of the seat and knuckling down and writing.
Exactly. We don't have a lot of time. I could talk to you for hours, but just tell us about your childhood, where you were raised and how a little bit about your childhood.
So I grew up at the foot of the Highlands in Scotland, a very little village called Braco. And I went to a primary school that had 28 pupils between the ages of 5 and 12. So very, very small and very much able to cater for individuals because they had to. You know, my year group as such was 4 people. So there were 2 teachers handling all these children. So they had to be very good at, you know, allowing people to work at their own pace, which worked very well for me because I was interested in reading voraciously. I was also very mathematical and they allowed me to go ahead and so forth. And I swam a lot outside of school because that wasn't offered at a state school, which is what I was at there. And I loved it. I really love Scotland. There's something about the landscape which I think just hints of mystery and myth and legend, and you really do believe that there could be Selkies in the cave on the coast and so forth. It's just crying out for that kind of imagination. And I really enjoyed setting my second book, The Missing Years, in Scotland, because it was very much set in the area that I grew up in, and it felt like an homage to that.
You know, we drove quite a bit in the Highlands. I might have gone through your village, I don't know. We just had so much fun. We had friends who, they smoked salmon, so they were always a destination spot for us, because there is nothing like smoked Scottish salmon.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful place to visit, because I had heard, actually, you know, for Scotland it was a rough time, tourist wise, you know, during the pandemic, and some, you know, of the hotels practically closed down, and I hope that people will start going there again, because it's just so beautiful.
It is so beautiful, but you're right, they had quite a hard lockdown, shall we say. I do think that things are pretty much back to normal. My dad and my sister still live in the area I grew up in, so I'm back there fairly frequently, and things do seem to be recovering.
Trip to Scotland to stay in Edinburgh for a little while, and to then get to, you know, the Highlands, it's fantastic. The new book is great. I love it. I was really just taken with the whole storyline. We don't want to give anything away, but people, it is really it's a great mystery. It's a great suspense. And it's called Bright and Deadly Things. And the cover is so, I love it. I love that cover. Do you frame these covers? Just look at them?
I don't. I obviously have the books on my bookshelf, but you're absolutely right. The art department at Berkeley have completely knocked the ball out of the park on this one. It's gorgeous.
This one you should absolutely turn into a poster. I would look at that all day long. It just, well, in Switzerland, and we have all the story behind it. So make a poster out of that one for yourself.
Okay.
Do that. Take a picture of yourself standing next to your poster, and then you can put it on Facebook, and we can all see that. How about that?
That sounds like a very good idea.
Okay. And so you have a website, and it is just Lexi Elliott, right?
LexiElliott.com, that's correct.
And 2 L's, 2 T's, and right? I think 2 T's, right?
Yep, 2 L's, 2 T's, and Elliott, correct.
Okay, good. Well, Lexi, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are an inspiration, I think, to so many people, because you started in some other field. You decided to, you know, well, take a field that you might love, but always in the back of your mind, you knew that you wanted to get something on paper and you wanted to share it. And that's why I call this program Joy on Paper. Because once you get that joy on paper, you know that you're putting words down that people will then read at some point and they'll say, wow, I needed that story. I needed that break. I needed that afternoon or a few days of just getting away from my own mind and getting into somebody else's scary mind here in this book. But you have some great ideas in it. So again, Lexi Elliott, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you.
It's been a real pleasure for me. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that poster on your Facebook page, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.